In this week's discussion, we are going to approach the narrative in a very unique way. Like any narrative in the Bible, it gives over themes, it gives over symbols through the story, ideas that are essential. For Rav Hirsch, he approaches it in quite a unique fashion. The two messages, or the two warnings, let's call it, of this week's parasha are, on one hand, why a belief in God does not make you a good person, and how this is being demonstrated by the parasha. And secondly, we will touch upon Rav Hirsch's general approach when it came to clashes between science and religion, and where Rav Hirsch felt the tension really lied. By way of brief background, we have two villains in this week's parasha, two villains that give over both unique messages and unique themes. We have a king and we have a prophet. Now, the uniqueness about one of these villains, the one called Bilam, the prophet, the one who is called upon by Balak to curse the Jewish people, he is described, for all intents and purposes, as a man of God. He's a monotheist. God connects to him. We're told that God communicates with him. So we're not dealing with our average villain. And as the story progresses, Bilam attempts to curse the Jewish people, sidestepping, for the purposes of this discussion, what exactly a curse means and how an attempt by an individual to sway God's mind would make sense. But to give an indicator, if we look at what is the opposite of a curse, that would be a blessing. Now, in Judaism, we make blessings the whole time. But what does it mean to bless? The word baruch is used. Now, often people sidestep this in terms of its literal translation, which is to bless, because how can you bless God? Because that's what you're saying. Rav Hirsch takes very much the opposite direction and says, well, no, that's precisely what you're doing. To bless means to commit yourself to furthering or accomplishing the goals of the one you're talking to. To bless someone means that you wish to fulfill or work towards the fulfillment of their goals. So in Judaism, when you make a blessing, that is precisely what you're doing. You're committing yourself to the furthering of the goals in what you're talking about. And a curse would be somewhat of the opposite, to undermine. Putting that to one side, from a very basic point of view, to curse means to undermine from within. And this was the attempt of Bilam from different perspectives. He would attempt to undermine or point to an area that the Jewish people as a nation were lacking, an area that could be the source of their downfall. And he attempted this from three perspectives. We will focus on the last one. And with a combination of who Bilam was as a person and his belief system, as well as his attempt to curse the Jewish people, Rav Hirsch draws two powerful messages essential to what we mean by God and what we mean by humanity. So just to put our roadmap on the table, we're going to begin with a description of this week's parasha, or an event in this week's parasha, where Rav Hirsch does really take a unique approach, but then we're going to extract the two messages. So three attempts were made, three attempts to point out an area that could undermine the Jewish people from within. And naturally, Bilam went to the first port of call, material prosperity. The location, the symbolic indicator, B'moas Baal, the heights of Baal. Baal being the Canaanite god that represented physicality, that represented prosperity. And the answer Bilam gave, or the answer that he was forced to give, was that Jewish people do not depend on physical prosperity for their survival. They are joined by something higher. Failing this first attempt, our villain moves on to his next port of call. If you cannot control the physical, what of the spiritual? What about the celestial worlds, the constellations? The next port of call was known as Sedei Sofrim, the field of seers, the fortune tellers, the soothsayers. For these are the people we consult to know our fate, to know our future. Where do the Jewish people stand in this ability? And the answer he got was no. The Jewish nation is an Am. It is united by a cause. It does not lie down. It rises and chooses its fate. It acts in the world, and through action it determines its own future, not passively accepting it by the word of a soothsayer. So the first attempt and the second attempt have failed. Areas in which to undermine where the Jewish people stand in reference to these two key concepts do not apply to the Jewish people, do not apply to this people that Bilam is attempting to curse, to undermine. His last port of call is our focus. His last port of call is where Rav Hirsch's message, his universal message, becomes strongest. The last location, Rosh HaPahar, the heights of Pahar, the Canaanite god of Baal Pahar, called on its adherents to embrace their animal side, to embrace the recognition that they are just another form of primate, that they are just another form of animal, and this should be embraced, not shame, but to embrace it. This was the highest goal. This was the highest ideal of the Balpa'or adherents. The ideal that we are just animals. For remember, what is idolatry? Idolatry is the idea that you take a principle, you take an idea from within yourself, and you make it the most high. You make it the ultimate aim that you will strive for. In Rav Hirsch's time, there were different ideologies that would come to the forefront that he felt needed to be challenged. And these ideologies are given expression in the biblical narrative. And two areas that he felt needed to be stood against. Two areas that people had taken ideas or concept and made it their most high goal. One was derived from an economist and one was derived from a biologist. And the one we are going to focus on is his general approach to evolution. Now, it's interesting because often when this topic is put on the table, people approach it with their issues or their problems from a scientific perspective. That was not Rav Hirsch's approach. He didn't feel there was any sort of inherent contradiction or any irreconcilable problem from a scientific standpoint. He approached it from a moral standpoint. In the same way, when it came to Marxism, there is a risk that you will degrade the individual as being merely a cog in the machine of the political structure, and you will mix the ends and the means being the political structure, not the ends. The people, the polis, gathering together is not an ends. It is a means for a people, for a group of people to achieve higher goals, to strive for a more noble cause, be that in the Jewish sense in terms of a moral mission, or be it community, be it family. And this is allowed, or this is facilitated through a nation-state. That risk Rav Hirsch stood against in Noach, in the parsha where we discuss the Tower of Babel, and as how the people as a whole came together with no care for the individual in service of the structure they were building. And Rav Hirsch took his stance there. And in this week's parsha, he takes his stance against an ideology that could seep out of Darwinism. Rav Hirsch here is not talking about the veracity of the claim. I mentioned before, from his point of view, he saw no direct contradiction, anything irreconcilable. And of course, different religious thinkers, both today and back then, took differing views on this topic. But that didn't mean he shouldn't warn of a philosophy that can fall from it. As we see demonstrated in this week's parasha, the idea that we are just an animal being celebrated as the most high goal. This was the cult of Pa'or for Rav Hirsch. This was the cult of Pa'or that Bilam went to for his last attempt to undermine the Jewish people. How do the Jewish people stand in reference to what is moral and what is good? And his reply was, Ma toivo alecha Yaakov. How good are your tents, O Israel? The structure of the Jewish people's encampment wasn't beautiful for Bilam. It was good. It was a moral call. It was a call that these people have set it up right. These people are living their lives in accord to what is morally right. They are living in accord to their moral mission, to the noble goal, that this cult of Pa'or pays no heed to. So to recap, we had three attempts by Bilam to undermine the Jewish people. One from the point of view of the material, second from the point of view of the spiritual or the future, and lastly, from the point of view of the moral. And the key Rav Hirsch always felt was essential to the Jewish message to the world is that our freedom is part of this reality, our ability to choose and transcend our animal side. This was the opposite message of the cult of Pa'or that said, whatever you feel, the animal within you is all you are, so embrace it. But this leads us to our second point. We should have a question. But Bilam was a man of God. What would cause this man? How could this man, believing in God, believing in monotheism, living his life as that as part of his reality, not only attempted to undermine the Jewish people, but also on top of that, he succeeded in the later chapters. So we have the validation in this week's parsha of an individual whose moral aptitude is subordinate to his ego. This is for Rav Hirsch one of the reasons why Jewish education is not about faith, but commitment to the commandments, commitment to doing what's righteous and just. And the term emunah literally means that. It means commitment to an idea. commitment to a concept, not your ability to articulate slogans of faith, because we know that reason too can compel someone to do that which is right, and despite all religious faith, people can become evil, as we see demonstrated in this week's parsha. Someone who believes, but it clearly having no effect on his moral character. So the idea emunah, inappropriately translated as belief, I suppose more closely related to the word faith, which comes from the word fides, which means trust. A Jew has emunah means that he is committed to his goals being God's goals. And when we say God, we don't mean that idea in a vacuum. We mean the specific goals that the Jewish people were called upon at the beginning of the Bible. Now, practice is something that is led to through this being an individual's highest goal. And that's the point of the commandments in the Torah, that they lead us towards this goal. The goal that Abraham was called upon, the goal that our forefathers were called upon to the world, that is what you mean when you say, I have emunah, in a Jewish context. In Judaism, the concept of a God is inextricably intertwined with action and commitment to good action, not a statement of belief in isolation. Your ability to believe in a God doesn't make you a good person. The same way your ability to deny God doesn't make you a bad person. Your actions and your commitment and your goals in life, that which is what determines whether you will be good or you're bad. So when a person says God, it's more interesting to find out what that God calls upon them to do, what that God calls upon them to put as their highest goal. The mission is at the core, the commitment to the ideas. Emunah, from the same idea of amen, to be committed to something, is at the root of what we mean by emunah in Hashem. We're committed to this goal. We're committed to this striving towards this aim. That is the commitment of the Jewish people, and our education reflects this. So to recap our 2 points. We came from the first approach, from the last port of call of Bilam, Rosh HaPa'ar, the peak of Pahar, the point that symbolized the degradation of man as being nothing but an animal, and Rav Hirsch felt the need to stand against this in his time and in our time today, that man's freedom is at the core of his reality, and he has the ability to look at his animal side and say, no, that's not what I'm going to do. Unlike the cult of Pahar, where it was embraced as being an ideal. And the second point, the idea of a belief in a God didn't help Bilam from his evil ways. Jewish emunah calls upon something far more sublime, not the simple recognition of the existence of a deity or a God, the articulation of a slogan that you believe in a certain thing that your mind can't really wrap its head around. In Judaism, it is a commitment to the fact that there is a calling on you. And this philosophy of emunah, this way of looking at the world, plays itself out in the Jewish penal code, that belief and thought are not penalized. What you think today and what you think tomorrow may change, but Judaism focuses on the action. Hence, punishment in Jewish law does not apply to the denial of God in either letter or word, but only in action. If the action denies a principle that it's supposed to be testifying to, that's when the penal code gets involved. To maybe give it a different spin, because I don't want to underplay the importance of the mind. A metaphor Rivka, my wife, uses to express this idea is that if you take a relationship, what is the most primary aspect, action or thought? Now, it's difficult to talk about like that because they're both essential, but the one that you care about in the here and now is the action. How you act towards your spouse is an indicator of how you feel towards them. Hence, you always start with action. But if there was only action, and there was no heart, there was no emotion, if the mind was not involved as well, then that is not a relationship. In a similar way, this is what we're talking about when we talk about Jewish connection with God, or emunah. This idea is supposed to be demonstrated by our actions and by our history. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to probably take a break for the next couple of weeks over the summer from doing the podcast. So until then, have a wonderful summer, and thank you very much for listening.